51551 is our text number. Joe at rte.ie. The murder of two men yesterday in Dublin, North Dublin, as they say, the general area, though they're quite distant apart, Darndale and Walshestown, about half an hour's drive from one to the other. Sean Little, 22, Jordan Davis, 23. And they're being linked as well to Zach Parker, who was also 23, and he was shot dead in January, and he over a drugs debt to a gang base in Finglas. We know nothing, and nothing can be said in fairness about Little, Sean Little or Jordan Davis, what they were involved in, except what you read is speculation in the papers. But Zach Parker was a convicted drug dealer and only 23. Now, that's one aspect, and we're returning that to the drug scene. The other aspect is people who use drugs and families who are devastated by drugs. Patrick, good afternoon.
Hello.
Patrick, how are you? I know you're in West Dublin. If you want to say exactly where you are, you can. But your family was devastated by drugs.
It was, Joe, yeah. And it culminated in the death of my youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. She started off around 13, 14 years of age.
Okay.
And she started off with cannabis.
Right.
And we were told at that time that this was the gateway drugs into heavier things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it turned out to be. She graduated to heroin. And there was nothing but disaster from start to finish.
Right.
Total disaster.
And were you aware that she was on cannabis to begin with and then moved on to other drugs?
No, not at first, because we knew nothing about that type of thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had to... First of all, she came into the house one evening, and now I don't know what she had at that stage, but there was something wrong with her, and I had to call the doctor on call, and
okay.
he had a look at her, and she was in the bedroom upstairs, and the words he said to me, and... I always remember that he said, "You prepare yourself for a long, hard road," and he was totally true. Right, what happened, you know?
And
after that, it was just disaster.
And what did it, do you know that particular night with the doctor on call? Do you know what type of drug she had taken?
No, he didn't say, and maybe he didn't know. I don't know, but we didn't know.
Wow.
And it was only when, I went to the guards initially. I had the guards out around where I lived. And there was a meeting of local residents, and at that time the guards told us there was no problem. And just the whole thing escalated from that time. That would be back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And a whole generation of around my daughter's age, maybe 12 people or more, young people, all died, or all were involved with that type of thing.
Yeah.
Not dealers, but from taking it.
When did your daughter die, Patrick?
Only 4 years ago.
Oh my God! And what age was she?
39. 39 years of age.
And what happened to her in the end?
Well, she took her own life. She told me on a few occasions that this is what she would do. That she would she would take a. You know, get a large dose of heroin and take it to end her life. And that's what she did. And she was with psychiatrists, psychologists, all there in many institutions she was in.
Yeah.
And the last place she was in was St. Patrick's Hospital.
Yeah.
And she was discharged prematurely because she kicked up some kind of a rumpus.
Yeah.
And... It was all variable. There was no violence,
yeah, okay.
But it turned out that the feelings of the staff were more important than the patients.
Okay. Well, maybe your daughter, as you know, the drug people who are addicted to drugs become extraordinarily manipulative. Maybe she wanted to try and get out. But where did she get the money to be using drugs for such a long time? Because we know it's all about for the people involved who are selling. It's to them. It's all about money.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where she would get the money, but there was crime involved as well.
Oh, was there, yeah.
And she was in and out of prison for a time. And, to me, it was She was a child. She was just doing all the things that she should have done, doing all the proper things, music, you know, gymnastics, all that kind of thing. And this stuff just changed everything, and all but destroyed my family. Yeah. And originally, we didn't know. Her behaviour was very erratic.
Yeah.
Around 13 years of age or something. I can't even remember the exact time scale. And she came out then when she was about 18 or 19. She was in the Rutland Centre, yeah. And she came out to her that she had been raped when she was about 5 or 6. From a guy who didn't live too far away from us.
Okay.
But he was up and gone.
Okay.
And he was never got. And I given him to the guards. Psychologists, doctors, and even never got. And okay. To my mind, this badly
affected her. But she started on drugs, and it was drugs that effectively ended her life. It was her addiction to drugs that she felt she was. We can't put motivation on
it
people.
Was.
Yeah,
it was, Joe. But there was also depression.
Yeah,
and that's a major factor, because they tried to cover up whatever pain they have.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't pass the house where she had been attacked. Mm. And she would say all these things to me, but she couldn't relate them to a professional person.
Okay.
So she didn't get the help that she should have.
Okay.
And
Stay with us, Patrick, if you would, please. 51551. And we have Pádraig O'Reilly. Pádraig is a photojournalist and has been covering this end of the crime spectrum for a long number of years. And he has an uncanny knack of being invariably the first there with Nicola Tallant or whatever, but he's extraordinarily on the ball. Pádraig, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon.
Yesterday, between these two young men, and they lived quite close, Coolock and Darndale. But between Sean Little and Jordan Davis, they hadn't 44 years of life lived yet. Why are 22-year-olds, and then go back to Zach Parker, why are men of that age being murdered so casually in Dublin at the moment?
I think so. There is a thought that when you enter into that sort of world of that gang crime, that your life expectancy obviously shortens dramatically, you know. So we start with young dealers, like dealing anything, 100, 200 euro a day, then it develops to profits, then they get greedy, then it's profit and paranoia, and it ends up like this, you know. Like, we don't know, there is one word of thought that maybe one of the victims yesterday was set out to avenge his friend Zach Parker's murder in Swords outside the gym earlier this year. Now, that's one line of inquiry for the detectives investigating Tuesday night's murder. It's still quite unknown. It's very early stage to say anything on why the second chap, Jordan Davis, was murdered in Darndale just after 4 o'clock yesterday. But it's just, we're seeing the profits, cocaine. I mean, I don't know, Christy Mangan, chief superintendent up in Drogheda, wrote a piece with Nicola Tallant the weekend, Sunday World.
Okay.
And it's shocking. It's shocking to read. Like, he's basically saying that cocaine is a national problem now and it needs to be treated by national health. Another chap I'm talking to is talking about profits involved in this. So it's all about money. Patrick, speaking to you there a few minutes ago, he spoke about the money. It's all about money. And these guys about money and power. Like, they're bringing, the gangs in Spain are sending up, say, a kilo of cocaine. They're buying it at 28 grand. They're breaking it down 4-to-1 using all types of synthetic drugs from China called Snowblow. Lidocaine that dancers use for a numbing effect. So they'll buy it off the Colombians in Spain for about 28,000 euro per kilo. They mix it 4-to-1. They can put it down to a city, say in Limerick, and sell it to dealers for 100 grand for the 5 kilos. So that's a profit out of the 28.
Wow.
That's a profit of 72,000 euro.
Incredible, yeah. 300%, 400%. Incredible.
And then obviously it goes up in price. price as it gets knocked out onto the street. So the street value of a kilo at the moment is about €70,000 in this country.
And just as you mentioned Zach Parker, and it's been a phenomenon now in Ireland for a number of years. He was 23 years of age, and I'm sure he was loved by his family, and his, I know his partner gave a very moving eulogy in the church. Yeah. Yeah. But at his funeral, there was a stretch, black stretch Humvee arrived. You know the one you see going to Debs balls or whatever. And a group of men, all dressed the same, apparently with baseball hats, white shorts and black ties, all got out and kind of semi-marched up to the grave. The grave was adorned by incredible floral arrangements, which were based on luxury brands like Gucci and Alexander and all these names. And one floral tribute at the grave was in the form of a Rolex watch. And the actual centrepiece was a real clock. It wasn't a Rolex, obviously. But, like, do people not say, he was a man at 23. Where was he getting the money to have a Rolex watch, to have this incredible lifestyle? At 23, he was a barber, I think. And then this whole ritual now that's developing around these funerals. What's all that about? Is that part of the gangland culture that you wear the same outfit, that you use the same code on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook? What is that, Pádraig? What is that culture?
That's what it is, Joe. It's like they style themselves on type of Italian mafia. Like, if you notice at David Byrne's funeral in February 2016, all the main funeral goers were wearing pale blue shirts.
Yeah, and suits. But, weren't they all wearing the same colour suits?
Suits, yeah. But the pale blue colour has been picked up as sort of the Kinahan cartel sort of sign. So even yesterday, when you saw some of the tributes going up to Sean Little, the love hearts were in blue, you know? And as you said, the guys in the limousine at Zach Parker's funeral were wearing all pale blue shirts. That's a signal that this is that they are cartel. But they see themselves as bigger than they are by buying these, you know, rich goods, like, as you say, Rolex watches, Cartier, expensive Gucci suits. Like, some of them are playing, like, I mean, this guy, this Dutch guy who was caught last year, or 2017, hiding out in Dublin, who worked for Daniel Kinahan, was wearing, like, a pair of trainers worth €800. Four expensive watches found, all belonging to him, maybe 12,000 to 15,000 in different currencies, just hanging around.
Yeah, but I'm getting a glimpse now of that. By the way, you say the pale blue shorts is a uniform or whatever, or is a status symbol, and all these big brands are these status symbols. What about on, like we heard yesterday, one of the poor men that was shot, Jordan Davis, had just posted on Facebook, and it's this phenomenon on Facebook. I don't know why people think the dead can read Facebook, but it's this phenomenon on Facebook of talking to your pal who's dead and saying, you were the best in the world, buddy, and I hope you're in paradise now. Is there a symbol that they use on Facebook to identify that they're part of a particular grouping?
Well, it's hard to see that because most of them on their Instagram accounts are private accounts.
Yeah, okay.
And some of these accounts are so small, and they're using certain types of encrypted phones that they're actually using social media to do business on. You know, they could have groups of maybe just five or six people, but they're using encrypted phones as well. It's impossible to detect them, really, you know, unless I presume you have like the likes of Facebook helping you out, which I don't think they're too keen on doing that, you know.
Okay. Now, Pádraig, given that we've been talking about before yesterday's tragedies, the cannabis, and I must say now we had a lot of people on who had adverse effects from cannabis, but is there much money in cannabis?
There's a huge amount of money in cannabis. If you consider, like, the Garda National drug units and the local units over the last, say, 2 years are finding an awful lot of grow houses. It's definitely on the increase. Mostly, it was foreign groups growing this. Now, it's Irish gangs have taken it over, but they're still using the expertise of Asian. The Asian community are very good at growing cannabis and the setup. So they could take over a rent, maybe a 3 to 4 bedroom semi-detached house, block it up. That allows them to have four grows a year. Now, I'm told that maybe a four-bedroom house can produce about €250,000 worth of growth each quarter. So that's €1 million from a house. That's nearly all profit. Once the initial setup is done, all you're doing then is seeds.
Incredible.
Each quarter. So it's huge money. Obviously, the spray, the pesticides and stuff they're spraying on them are highly toxic. So we're seeing this really, really high strain of weed on the street now. And it's obviously like it's causing suicide amongst the young. Where, say, you'd have a young fella maybe hits a bit of a stumbling block in life, where it wouldn't be a big event usually. But if he's, basically, you can really say strung out on weed, like there's certain centres now that are actually taking kids in for counselling and addiction on weed. It's that powerful. And that's causing massive problems.
And it was mentioned in the letter to the Irish Times earlier on by the 20 medics, mostly psychiatrists, and they said it used to be heroin, now it's cannabis that is the cause of the most admissions, the greatest number of admissions to psychiatric units. Porrick, you were working with a Dutch film crew in Dublin recently. What did they think?
Well, they were over here and they were visiting, say, the underprived areas around Europe, six different cities. But they were coming from the view of sort of the social, the consciousness of it, and they're visiting little groups, say, in Darren Down Priors, dance groups, people that do it off their own back to take the kids off the street. But we were in around there for a few days. But what really, really struck them about the Dan, like these guys have been inside the dark side of Naples and Bucharest and their own city, Amsterdam. What really struck them, really, like we've been singless, we've been north and south of the city. But what really struck them about sort of Darrendale, Prior's Wood, up around Boatview, was the lawlessness. That's what really gripped them. They said, we've seen heavy crime, but we haven't seen the lawlessness that goes on in here. It's like there's gates across the estate and they just sit closed and do what you want inside there. That's basically the way it appeared to them as outsiders.
And what do you mean by lawlessness, Porrick? Openly selling drugs?
Openly selling drugs. Huge problem with, say, trials bikes and...
scramblers.
Quad bikes, yeah. Scramblers. Like, I mean, while we were there, just before we had visited... The first time, a guy had been sunbathing with his girlfriend, an Eastern European lad, one of these, and he has really, really bad life-changing injuries as a result of that.
And no one's ever been got for that either, surely.
No one's ever been got for it. But all these guys they're only 15, 16. All the bikes are uninsured, not taxed. Very hard for them to be detected because they just fly. They see the guards, they just fly through a park, back streets, they're gone.
Okay, say with us, Porrick, please. Though, if you have to run off, because you seem to have an uncanny knack of, and you're not going to tell me how you get to tip off, but you have an uncanny knack and you've done incredible work in Limerick in terms of highlighting the work of the Gardaí and also in Dublin. But stay there, Porrick.
Thanks, Joe.
And by the way, nobody in any shape or form wants to see 22-year-olds die. In any shape or form. So condolences to the family of Sean Little and indeed Jordan Davis. Let me bring Marianne in. Marianne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Now, go ahead, sorry.
I think the parents and grandparents and all will have to stand up to, we cannot legalise drugs and we shouldn't legalise them. Or every parent should stand beside each other and stop all this carry on.
And what's your story, Mary?
Sorry.
What's your own situation?
My situation was I had a boy. I loved him so much, and here he was taking cannabis, and he never could get off it. Never, you know, when he was a young child.
Yeah.
But I think if we got psychologists to look after them early in years.
And what age is he now, Mary?
Oh, he's I'm 82, so he's 60.
And is he still using cannabis?
Still out, and when he comes home, he's out in the garden there, and the smell of it, and I shamed my life, and, you know, if you say anything to him, he'll get aggressive towards me, and he's not an aggressive boy, really, and at other times. My husband fell outside, and the ambulance was called. Well, he was abusing them. I was ashamed of my life.
Your son was abusing the paramedics?
Yes. And, you know, like, I mean, what's going to happen in a few years' time? I'm after my boy for the from the early 80s. And
he's in his 60s, so he's been on cannabis for, what, 40 years?
40 years.
And where does he get the money, Mary?
No, well, you know, he's on disability. Mm. And I, when he needs shoes or something like that, I'll buy them for him. Many coats I bought for them, but he'd sell them.
Yeah, of course.
And suits. But I think it's up to the parents to come out on the street and say, no, we don't want this. I know if one of my fellas, well, thank God, none of them but him, but I'll tell you one thing, if they pulled up in a limousine and all these things, I wouldn't be going to a funeral. I'd be at home giving out like hell. I wouldn't go now if he joined any of them groups.
And you're saying you wouldn't, would you go to his funeral?
I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't.
Your own son's funeral?
My own son's funeral, I wouldn't go. We have to stop. You know, like, I mean, do you think that I was going to be an idiot walking after the son I tried to mind for so many years? Yeah. I love him. I love him, and everyone knows I love him. But do you think that I'd be got dead out there with a limousine and all that for that? I would not. And I think the parents and the relatives and everybody has to get together and say, this has to stop.
And, like, did he ever get into debt if he's on...
Oh, he stole money, you know, and you'd be running after him and trying to get paid back and everything else. But, like, he was... Now, I listened to about them coming out with cortages, coming out on the funerals. I would not. They don't need. That's advertising their problems.
In one sense, they're advertising their achievements by the amount of money they've made with their floral tributes to Rolex and to Gucci and all that carry on. Now, did anyone ever call to your door looking for money?
Oh, they did, and the guards, traffic offences, and everything else. The guards, you know. You can ring the guards and ask, I was after him morning, noon and night. Mm. You know, I couldn't, and I had 9 children, but the other 8 were great, thank God. But, like, he was an unfortunate, and I think, you know, when he was a little fella, I used to think something might happen to him. You know, I was getting messages somewhere or another from him. And he's a good... When he doesn't smoke, that is lovely. But, like, I mean...
By the way, I know when the Gardaí call, like, they say... You say, I don't know where he is, or I'll take the summons. That's fine, the Gardaí. But when someone calls looking for money, what do they threaten you with?
One time, I was staying with my daughter-in-law, and this fella came in looking for 1,100. This was early 80s.
Okay.
Now, 1,100, or he cut the dog's throat before night. Well, I'll tell you, when I got my hands on him, you know, like I could never relax. I could never enjoy motherhood, knowing that he was out there and going to be coming homeless and helpless.
But you're 82 now. You say he's in his 60s.
He's 82, and when that child never had a wet bed in his life. You know, I minded him.
Do you still Do you still mind him?
Oh, I'd still be. I look after everyone that comes to the house. Including yourself, Joe, if you come down to visit me.
I know, but this is the boy that stole.
Oh, yeah.
You said you're mortified when he goes...
A mother never loses the love for a child.
Okay.
We never lose the love.
Well, does he know that? Are you his safety net?
He knows it right well. He knows it.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I love him, but I hate what he does.
Yeah. Would you always open the door for him?
The parents have to come out and get out there and say, stop this nonsense. We want our lives back.
And you know people who say, well, legalise cannabis and therefore it'll be... better run, it'd be regulated.
Only to get it on a doctor's prescription, I would
Well, you can. Well, you can get to go to a consultant at the moment, but that's a completely different area.
No, I don't think so. I think what would a woman do, some woman at home with four sons, and they supposing they had four sons, and they were smoking cannabis on the settee when she wants to do some work around the house and get it tidied up and all that. In the name of God, would you be going?
Does your son smoke cannabis in the house?
Oh, no. I got the smell of it in the hall one day and I created hell over it. Now, I'm sure the neighbours must have heard me shouting, but, you know, I just couldn't help it, you know, because, you know, it sits on the veranda outside.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back. I want to take a break. I want to ask Padraig O'Reilly, the photojournalist. Padraig, this phenomenon in the UK, and it's in the news in the UK this week because they are this county lines phenomenon where there are big cities and there are drug gangs in big cities, but using the county transport system, buses and trains, they send gangs of youngfellas off every morning to go down to these towns and sell drugs. What's the network in Ireland, Padraig? Has every little town now got its own gang, or do the gangs arrive in from the cities?
I think it's more like the public control, in bigger towns. But if you take, say, over the last 5-6 years, the Garda National drug units have had operations in every county, and that's the 26 counties in the Republic, over the last few years, multiple raids, where to establish a dealer in front of a court, you have to buy often three times within 1 month. So let's say you buy a gram of cocaine at about €70 over a space of a month, three times. That establishes that he cannot say to the judge it's for his own personal use. He sold three times. So they will do multiple buys like this over a month and target maybe 40 to 50 local drug dealers within a county or a town. And then they'll come back maybe 2 months later and arrest every one of them that morning in their houses and bring them to court. Some of them have ran a couple of times in each county. That's every county. So it seems like in the older days, the guys with heroin would maybe travel into the cities like Limerick, Cork, but now it seems like they all have their own setups now within their counties.
It's so bad. There's so much drugs out there.
It's cocaine. As I was telling you, on the cheap soup and draught of Christy Mangan.
Who used to be in the drugs unit, was he not?
He was. So he's well experienced. He served 7 years there, so he knows very much what he's talking about, you know. And we see the global production of cocaine is that it's at record levels. We are now, Ireland is the fourth highest rate of internationally. We're behind, or we're ahead of the States. The States are number five. Scotland is number one.
Can I come in?
Just hang on, Marianne. And what rating is that, Padraig? Sorry, we're the fourth in the world on what? Sorry.
For our cocaine, okay, each user gets to an average of, say, about 0.6 of a gram on every single occasion they take it. That would be the scale of it. So we are fourth, whereas the Scots in each case would take about 1.2 grams on each occasion.
And I see you quoted Chief Superintendent Christy Mangan. He said Ireland has a massive issue with cocaine. It's loaded with cocaine. We will lose a generation of young people if we don't tackle it as a health issue. He warned that it's far worse than the heroin epidemic ever was, which is some statement coming from Christy in terms of his experience. Mm-hmm. People across society and of all ages are using cocaine. He warns Ireland risks using a generation of the young people unless the problem is addressed. Cocaine is literally everywhere, in every county and in every town. Wow.
Joe, he talks about, it's not like heroin. It goes through all scales of society. It's not just concentrated in one. And the real danger with cocaine and the wording that people are using, say, at the weekend, is recreational. That's a very dangerous word to associate with cocaine. Recreational, that means it's nearly becoming socially acceptable to use cocaine. The guy sits beside you rather than saying, here, get out of my company, you know? It's nearly socially acceptable to sit down someone across from you and snort a line of cocaine and not for the person not to bat an eyelid. Okay. That's a huge problem. And we're going from seeing this recreational weekends and then addictiveness into during the week. And there's many stories out there where it's direct homes and marriages,
yeah, of course.
Right through. And as we say, it knows no age divide. It's gotten it's right through.
Mary Ann, sorry, I just let you in before the break. Did you want to say something there, Mary Ann?
I want to say that someone will have to try and stop this because we are a small island.
And Mary Ann, do you think your son will stop at this stage?
They don't stop. He doesn't stop and he doesn't work. You know, just the dog there
Is that the dog that the drug dealer threatened to kill?
No.
Different
this was a time. He was always very fond of animals.
Okay.
And he'd always have a dog. Well, then we always had them here anyway, or wherever we lived. But I'll tell you one thing, if we don't come out against, take a stand now, and don't be televising those funerals and all these glamorous things, because, you know... Mm-hmm. You don't know where this vulnerable children looking at that on television.
The bling.
And maybe they take a drug because they follow with their mother or father or something
The quick and easy money, it's so-called. Okay, Mary-Ann, thanks indeed. Back after this break, 51551 joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rte.ie. Philip, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You contacted us. Why? You say I was addicted for 25 years. To what?
Cannabis, Joe.
Okay.
Weed. It destroyed me, Joe, mentally, physically and financially. I've been clean for the last 6 years now through the intervention of a treatment centre and a very good counsellor, counsellor, Dr. Kenny, but her name is Geraldine Hartnett.
Right.
She doesn't mind me naming her name, so... But,
And what age were you when you started using cannabis?
I was 15, Joe.
And what age?
All through my adult life, to 41 years of age.
And how often were you smoking cannabis?
Every day, Joe, from morning till I went to bed, every day. I just couldn't do without it. It took me over. And I know young people these days now, they think it's okay to smoke a joint, but...
Well, don't they see cannabis as almost semi-organic? You know, the leaf and the...
Over the last few years, it's actually becoming a lot stronger. Whatever chemicals are added into it, it's not just cannabis.
Yeah, Parigaride was saying that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's caused a lot of psychosis in young people and stuff, and it's devastating the effects it has. People don't realise how dangerous cannabis is. My personal experiences... It drove me to bring a suicide and everything, John. I lost my family over it. I lost everything I had. Yeah. You know, and it took me a while to get back everything I have. But now, the last 6 years have been the best 6 years of my life.
And did you try and get off it before? Let's come at it that way, Philip.
I tried myself, before, and I just couldn't do it. I'd get probably a day or two out of it, and I couldn't function without it, to be honest with you. And my whole life revolved around it. You know, getting up in the morning, having a joint and smoking all through the day, and if I didn't have it, then my whole life revolved around trying to get it, you know.
And where did you get the money?
I was working. I managed to have a job, but every penny I had went on the freaking cannabis.
But then
you
hear people who want to support legalisation of cannabis and park the whole medicinal use of cannabis. That's now under a different system here in this country, at least through the medical system. But you hear people saying, well, there's Philip now. You could hold down a job and be smoking dope.
You can, Joe, but it affects you mentally, does damage you mentally, you know. I only held down the job for the money for the cannabis because I didn't want to get in debt for it, because I got in debt a few times for it, because I actually, you know, I got stuff on tick, as they call it, but I couldn't afford to pay it back, but, you know, I got in debt several times over, but I managed to pay it back eventually, you know, and borrowing off other people and actually having to steal stuff as well, you know. It's crazy.
So what do you think, Philip, then the question is, what do you think of the campaign to legalise cannabis?
No.
Decriminalise, I suppose, the best way.
No, Joe, I'm definitely, totally against it, you know. From my experience, you know, and I'd like to say to any kids out there that are smoking it, you might think it's fun at the time, but like, you will get addicted to it, and over the years it will damage you mentally, and that's no lie, it will damage you mentally. Like, when I went to the treatment center, Joe, it took me 2 weeks to sleep. I was sweating in the bed. The detox off it was absolutely horrendous. You know, I couldn't sleep, I was sweating, I was stuck to the bed with sweat, bed sheets were wet, everything, you know. And you become very irritable and very angry, like, you know, even when you don't have it, you're very angry. You know, but thankfully, like, my life has turned around, you know, and I have faith in my life as well, like, which helped me as well, like, you know.
Right.
You know,
okay, well, that's
like
a pretty stark warning to people who think cannabis is almost part of a vegan diet at this stage. Stay there, Philip. Patrick O'Donoghue. Patrick, good afternoon.
Afternoon to you.
You say you can see these guys visiting the high-end shops at the weekend, splashing money.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. All you've got to do is walk into town.
Yeah.
And a particular shop on Grafton Street, the Phil Hyans trainers, tracksuit bottoms, tops, jackets, and they're there in gangs, walking around in the lower end, the ground floor level of it.
And how do you know that?
Well, you wouldn't want to be. You would only need to be a scientist to recognise them, to see them.
Well, and they travel in it. Now, they are buying the stuff.
They are buying the stuff there, yes. And there could be 10, 12 of them walking around in gangs, and they would intimidate you if they could get away with it, and they would try and intimidate you if you were standing close to them. And I know that the security guards there are watching them as well, because you can see them watching them.
Yeah.
And some of these trainers, I would think they're up to €1,000 maybe.
Yeah, but they're not doing anything illegal, sure they're not. They're spending money. They're not shoplifting,
but they're spending money that they're getting from their drug sales.
How do you know that?
But listen, Joel, you haven't got to be a fool to recognise that they are, that you know them. I lived in Amsterdam for a number of years, and I could recognise a drug dealer a mile away.
Yeah. And you were saying that they're so young, how could they accumulate such wealth?
They are 17, 18, up to 20 years of age. Some of them may be even younger. I've seen them as young as 15, 16 years of age there, walking around.
Who wanted to come in there, was that Parig or Patrick? Patrick, yes, Patrick, whose daughter died 4 years ago. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah. Joe, is that man there, the man before him said, cannabis will change a personality, and one smoke of cannabis will stay in the system and in the brain for 7 days. So if you're smoking, someone's smoking cannabis every single day, they will never come out of it, and they won't be able to function properly, as you know, has been proven there. But what these kids in school should be told, there are three things that drugs will do for you. One is you'll become a liar, you'll become a thief, and you'll become a criminal. That's for sure. Because they lie to get things to pay for their things. They'll steal, and that makes them a criminal. And that's what's in store for them. It never comes out of the brain, and they're the last ones to realise that they're paranoid, or lying. Yeah, because they're under the influence of the drug. It's a very heavy drug.
Yeah, Parig O'Reilly, before I let you go, Parig, you mentioned that these areas you were filming with some Dutch camera crew, and the whole impression was one of lawlessness. But did you see any Gardaí?
Very few. Very, very few. I'd say over a 2-day period, I think we maybe saw 2 different units of uniform. That's good. But I wouldn't put that down to the guards on the ground. It's not their fault. It's obviously budgetary and it's how management placed them out on a given day. But very little. It's just like it's just being left to its own device there. And now we come to a situation where we see, that's the fourth murder in, 20 months, as I said earlier on, all in close proximity of each other, like within a kilometre.
Yeah.
And that's just been allowed to basically, use the crude word, run amok and do what they want inside those estates. That's it.
And are people in those estates, Darndale, I know it's only parts of, and we keep saying parts of Coolock, parts of Ballyfermot, of Cardiff, Blanchardstown, parts of Dublin 8, and parts of the inner city. But are people afraid to do anything about it?
I think they are. I mean, like, obviously, like, we came across while we were in there, like, an awful lot of decent families, just work, hard-working people trying to rear their kids.
Yeah.
Bring them on to maybe something better. And, yeah, like, they just come in. They seem to come in at 6 o'clock from work and lock the door, and that's it, you know? And you see a lot of them speak to you about it when it comes to sort of Saturday morning. They just pack up the car and they just go off for the day. They can't just, like, there's a lot of green areas built around down there, but they're all wrecked, you know, from just constant bonfires.
Yeah, but you hear great work being done by schools, by after schools group, by community groups in Darndale. Really great work. But anyway, and that will continue. Thanks, Pádraig. That's Pádraig O'Reilly, photojournalist. Let me bring in Peter. Peter, good afternoon. Your friends, you say.
Joe, how are you doing?
Yeah,
you well?
Good, thanks, yeah.
I was just talking to your researcher there about some friends of mine over the years, and, you know, like myself and yourself and so many people out there, hard-working people and family men paying mortgages, the whole lot, but unfortunately through life circumstances and through pressures of probably, you know, bills and whatever, I knew a lot of them that unfortunately took cocaine and smoked cannabis, and, you know, three very, very good friends of mine with young families committed suicide because of the pressures of the whole lot. Now, I've thankfully never taken it. I have a few points, like most of us. But, you know, I just think it's horrific that
what
the damage
happens,
that
people,
this stuff can do.
What happens to your friends who do take it?
From what I could imagine and what they were telling me afterwards was, before, obviously, they passed, I believe the comedown is like a huge depression.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it can take days and days to come out of it, you know, and I know, look, I can only talk from, say, having a few pints that you might get a hangover and you take a few bottles of water and you get over it, but I believe the come down from this stuff is horrific, and that's when it happened to these guys, you know.
And what was their lifestyle, if you follow me? Because Pádraig O'Reilly was saying, like, think about cocaine, the difference between cocaine and heroin, and you heard the Garda chiefs from Tenda saying cocaine is worse than the heroin epidemic, as he experienced it as a lawman. But he said it's across all classes. That's the difference with cocaine.
My experience, Joe, would be, and people have this perception that it could be just around council estates in Dublin or down in the country, but from what I can see, it is obviously in council estates, and listen, there's some excellent people working and living in council estates.
Of course there is, yeah.
And there's good and bad people everywhere, and that's the way I've always taught in life. But there's high-powered people working in really, really top-class jobs, and at 6 o'clock on a Friday evening, it's rampant in Dublin City, in bars and pubs, you know?
Yeah.
Rampant. It's awful to see it. And it's hurting families, it's breaking up families, it's destroying them, and it's an epidemic, and that's just from what I see. And thankfully, I don't touch it myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. But okay, you also said, yeah, this is the second time in 7 weeks there's been a shooting outside a school. Yesterday, Jordan Davis was shot outside the school in Darndale near the church as well.
Yeah, and Carr Duff as well, Joe. Yeah. You know, out in Blanchardstown there, and the thing that I would fear. And I know there have been innocent people killed in this whole problem, but I would fear that a child would get shot or a parent or something like that, an innocent bystander.
Or a garda.
Or a guard, absolutely.
Yeah, the way things are. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, stay with us. 551551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at RT.ie. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. I just wanted to add another perspective there on the legalising cannabis thing.
Or decriminalising, I think.
Decriminalising it, exactly. So, I mean, cannabis is a substance like alcohol. People, you know, I feel very sorry for anyone who gets negative effects or, you know, anything like that from it. But the way we treat it in this country is that if you are, you know, kids, experiment. If you're an 18, 19-year-old kid and you get caught with a small amount of weed, you can go up in court and be criminalised, and your job prospects, life prospects can be destroyed. And is that really fair for something that basically everyone has at least tried in their lives, like alcohol? It doesn't suit some people. It might suit others.
Yeah, but see, Mary, this is the argument. On the one hand, you're saying alcohol, you're benchmarking it against alcohol. You think alcohol is bad. And you're saying, well, so if alcohol
we have this conversation about good and bad, but
yeah, but no,
not
but
everything
no,
is black and white.
Alcohol,
I mean,
sorry,
anything in excess.
Alcohol
is
harm.
Bad.
Alcohol is harmful.
Alcohol can be harmful in excess. I mean, so can cannabis in excess. You know, we have this black and white thinking about the issue. That,
yeah, but where is the evidence that I know there is evidence that alcohol in moderation doesn't cause major issues. But
yeah.
where is it? I know part of the problem is that because cannabis is illegal, the amount of research going is small. But where is the evidence that cannabis is good for you? Apart from medicinal cannabis, which is now catered for.
Apart from medicinal cannabis, if it has medicinal properties, in some cases it's subscribed for things like anxiety. If you can get the correct strains, I've been to Colorado and San Francisco and places where it's regulated, and you can go in there and say, look, I'm having anxiety, I'm having this, not even a diagnosed issue, and they will give you certain type of cannabis that might help with these things. It's not this evil, like, you know, with drink, with alcohol. Alcohol is a depressant. That's what it is. You know, you get a big high off it and then you come down a big low.
Okay, I'll come back to the whole argument of cannabis and alcohol in a sec. Patricia, good afternoon, Patricia.
How you doing, Joe?
Your son was into drugs, and what happened?
Yes.
What happened to his friend?
His friend committed suicide, again, drug-related, right?
Yeah.
And his funeral was massive. It was absolutely unbelievable. And that day, I was at the funeral, and that day I told my son, if anything happened to him and he went like that, his funeral would be a bin bag and to the crematorium, and the only person that would be there would be me.
And what was the funeral like?
It was huge, right? Now, it was heartbreaking, and the kids' parents was doing, you know, what they thought was best. But I was outside the church, and I heard one kid say to another, do you remember so-and-so's funeral? That was unbelievable. The party afterwards was fantastic. I worked in a hotel, and I seen the same thing after these funerals. Unbelievable parties.
And
you
saying,
sorry,
okay, lots of people get big funerals, but are you saying it was a flashy funeral?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, again, the whole extravagance of it, you know, a massive coffin and
those American style coffins,
unbelievable, and that sort of thing. But that's what I told mine, and I meant it, and I told him the only person that would be there would be me. I wouldn't even let his brothers and sisters go.
And was he into drugs?
That was just to let one kid see that, you know, it's not all about, this is what drugs are, nothing, not glamour, nothing.
And was it that scene again, young men all dressed the same in flashy suits and...
No, it wasn't quite that.
Okay.
No, it wasn't quite that.
Sunglasses. By the way, was your son into drugs?
Yes.
Okay.
But he's fine now. He's
great.
The best in the world.
Well
you
done.
Know, had our battles straightened him out, but...
And when you said to him, if you ever die, don't be thinking you're going to be idolised like this at a funeral, a flashy funeral. You'll go in a bin bag to Newlands Cross or whatever.
Yes, that's what I told him. And I meant it.
And
I genuinely meant it.
And what shook him? What turned him?
At the time, like, he was still on drugs, and whether I was getting through or not, but it was just battling and battling away at him.
Yeah. Fair play to you, by the way. And you say you work in a hotel, you've seen these flashy funeral parties.
Yes,
and
I did.
What does that mean? No expense spared, free bar?
None whatsoever. None.
And what is that about?
DJs
what is,
and the whole lot.
What is that about?
I have no idea.
Why would you turn...
I think it's just glamorising the whole thing, and I think that's where you need to stop it.
But you can't, know. Like the Gardaí can't stop funerals.
No, I know they can't. But I'm saying if parents of these kids said, no, I'm not having this, you know.
And the parents should ask, where did you get the Rolex watch? Or where are you getting those trainers for 600 quid? And where are you getting those incredible suits? I know if you work, fair play to you, and you earn your money or whatever, that you do whatever, but people who obviously have no visible means of income, as they say, you're saying the parents just checked them and say, hang on a minute, where are you getting your money from?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I think even if something does happen to these kids, whether it's suicide because of drugs or whatever, don't let it go to that extreme of a funeral. And if one kid even learns from it, you know, that, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing to gain from drugs, nothing. It's not about a big flashy funeral. You're gone and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not about writing, being written about on Facebook. You're not able to read
no,
it.
No, absolutely
saying
not.
Saying how brilliant you were.
Absolutely
what's
not.
That? What's the point in that?
That nonsense has to stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Patricia. Yeah, mind yourself. Thanks indeed. John and John in Carrick Mines in Dublin. You say you're a limo driver, John. Okay, your phone now is reverberating on me. 51551, we'll check it.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
You were talking about drugs and drug death and drug deaths and drug debt and deaths from drugs and the amount of money involved and the conspicuous demonstration of wealth, especially among young people, be it in their lives or be it in their, tragically, in their funerals. Bernie is in the southeast. Bernie, good afternoon. Your point, please.
How are you, Joe? I would like to kind of comment on it because sometimes it just makes my blood boil. The kids in this town that are ruined with drugs. Mm. And I just feel I don't buy into the whole thing that the guards can do nothing about it. And if they can do nothing about it, they should tell the country and get somebody else in to do something about
and
it.
And like how population of your town, do you know? 4,000 or 5,000 or 50,000?
Well, Joe, you only have to walk around the town any day of the week and you'll see kids out of their heads on drugs. Myself and my husband were walking up through the town at 1 o'clock on a Monday to collect our grandchild, and there was a girl. If she was 16, Joe, she was a lot. She was still in her pyjamas and she could not stand up. She was falling around the place. There was kids buzzing all around her, all out of their heads. I mean, it's just scary, Joe. They're after being turned into zombies. And I just don't buy into this that the guards can do nothing. Unless there's an absolute no tolerance at all for it. We're never going to, and it's going to get worse, Joe. I remember years ago they said in Dublin, the gangsters, the old gangsters, they were up, whoever, to whichever one of them said it, you think we're bad, you'll see what's coming after us. Well, this generation are going to get an awful shock when the next crowd come along, because there's poor little kids being reared by junkies out there. And I just feel so terrible for them. Yeah. If the guards are able to stop people non-stop on the road, stopping people for tax, insurance. They're never off the road down here. The camera vans are everywhere. They're making a fortune. If they just put 1 month of that money into helping people get these drugs out of the kids are destroyed, Joe. And the ones that are not taking them are owed money. Their lives are ruined. The suicides are soaring because kids are so terrified. I've seen kids dealing drugs down here. Kids now. On mountain bikes with haversacks full of drugs. I've seen it, Joe. Yeah. People pull up in BMWs, empty the bag, fill it with the other thing, and off they go again. Ask anybody, where do they deal drugs? You could be pointed in the direction in 1 minute flat, day or night, Joe. And I just don't buy into this. They can do nothing about it. People are afraid to have any... You wouldn't walk around this town, Joe, in the day, never mind in the night, on your own. I'm so mad over it. I was behind a fella once, Joe, and he was a self-employed fella. He was stopped, his tax was out. And what did they do, Joe? They took his van off of him. They emptied his tools out onto the road and took his van. And behind that van, Joe, I know this now, there was a man and he deals drugs in a BMW. Now, Joe, you tell me where the fairness is there. They can put camera vans on every corner. They're making millions out of it. They can stop you for seatbelts and put you off the road. I seen a kid, and I know he works in a gym, Joe. I saw him getting his car took off him because his tax was a little bit out. And there's people driving around this town in 100,000 pound cars, and they're signing on the door. Now you tell me, Joe, where the fairness is there. This country is going to be destroyed when the next generation are coming up. They're shooting people for 50 quid, Joe. There's kids jumping in the river because they can't. Their debt doubles every day that it passes. There's mothers out there. I couldn't say they're rearing their children because I pity the poor children knocked up in flats with them. They're junkies and they're out of their head.
Yeah, that's right.
And their only thing in life is to get the money for the next fix. Could you imagine a little baby in that flat with them, Joe?
I know, I can't.
Yeah. I am just so disgusted. When I hear the likes of Leah Varadkar going off for lunch with Kylie Minogue and that, you tell me, Joe.
Well, that's not. But, yeah, but that's kind of it's irrelevant, really. But anyway, I think they're very stark warnings. And what's your description of what you see in your relatively small town, Bernie, in the southeast?
Small town, Joe. And walk up through it any day of the week, yeah, and yeah. It would break your heart. Kids begging on the streets, and they're out of their heads. Now, the drugs, you're talking about hash. Joe, I see two children in school uniforms by the park, and they were sitting on the wall, and they were rolling up joints in their lunch break. Now,
and what
it's
do you
easier
think?
To buy drugs down here than it is to get drink. We seen a girl in a school uniform. She wasn't even 14, Joe. I'd say she was 13. And she was trying to buy a bottle of vodka. What is after happening? Now, luckily, the man in that shop, we stared and watched. He said, no, get out. A 13-year-old trying to buy a bottle of vodka at 1 o'clock in the day, Joe. But unless the tolerance is just... There's no accountability down here. There's no... Unless every single time they stop a child or a boy or a man dealing drugs, and girls, Joe, I've seen the girls doing it too, and take, if they're found with them, everything they have on them taken off, every penny they have on them taken off, and if you're caught three times, there should be a three-strike thing, Joe, like they have in other countries. There's absolutely no law. It's no point following the people around. They're only laughing at you, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, let me bring it back up. Well, sir, back to Dublin now from the southeast. Philip Jennings is coordinator of a Safer Blanchardstown. Philip, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How are you? Nice to talk to you.
Likewise. What's your observations, please?
Well, I suppose from having done research into the whole drugs issue, you know, one of the big pointers that came out for us doing the research was that there's a clear link between people's drug use and the violence that's caused. Now, when we talk about people's drug use, we're not specifically speaking about people who would find themselves drug dependent or addicted to drugs, but what's termed now is recreational drug use. And people think, like, well, I'm only spending 10 euros or so a week, or 20 euros a week, or I'm only using once a week, and it's not affecting me, so therefore I'm not doing any harm or any wrong. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, that's really where all the money comes from, is this personal use or recreational drug use. And a simple sum that any school kid could do or any small area could do is to try and estimate how many people would be using drugs in their school or their factory or shop or whatever, or their workplace or in the pub that they drink in, how many people are using drugs at the end of the week or once a week. And if that's only 10 euros and you multiply it by the amount of people you estimate are using drugs and multiply that out by a year, it'll give you an estimate of the type of money that people are generate for drugs gangs. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a Think Before You Buy campaign that we've been trying to promote here locally and nationally. It was taken up by the Police Service of Northern Ireland and the Northwest Regional Drugs Task Force.
What does that mean? What does it mean before you tell me you took it up? What does Think Before You Buy
mean? It's really just to get people to think, you know, before they buy drugs, what's the effect their 10 euros is going to have. You can't be thinking that it's having no effect. I mean, these drugs have to be produced, processed and imported.
And does it have any impact, Think Before You Buy?
Well, in any of the presentations that we've given, and we've given presentations to a lot of joint policing committees, to a lot of students in schools, in universities and things like that, there's very little criticism of the campaign.
Okay, stay there for a second. I want to go to John, sorry, the limo driver who...
Yeah.
The line I'm told is okay again. John, good afternoon. What are you seeing in your limousine? Are you seeing anything at the moment, John? John, are you there?
How you doing, Joe?
Yeah, what are you seeing? What do you see in your limousine work?
Well, I see people coked up, especially at the weekends, you know.
Who? Like what? And
well, it doesn't matter who they are.
I don't want their names.
Want their names, but they could be from any walk of life, you know. Wouldn't necessarily be the upper echelons. It could be middle class, could be lower class people, depends. But especially at the weekends.
And Páraic O'Reilly's observation that it's cocaine use is not, as heroin use often was, a solitary addiction. You'd go into a room on your own and you'd bang up, to use that awful phrase. But he was saying cocaine is almost a communal drug.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you get maybe three or four guys hop in the car going into town and they're flying out of their heads, and you don't smell alcohol off them, so there's only one thing they could be on is cocaine, you know. Their eyes are out on stalks, they can't keep up with the words coming out, they're trying to speak too fast, they're all excited, it's incredible, you know.
And you also make a point about the workplace, that they need to do something.
Oh yeah, like if you think about it, I have a pet theory of mine is that half of the reason for the financial crash is probably down to cocaine and alcohol, particularly cocaine. Because if you think of the decisions that were being made by financial institutions, basically to give all their money away, you'd have to be on drugs to make a decision like that, you know? So I think if anyone is dealing with people's money, like investment people or anything like that, or bankers, they should be regularly tested for drug use.
I think the problem with the normalisation and the trivialisation of drugs is that it's a societal problem. Everybody needs to take a role in challenging when drugs are used and what are spoken about, and how they're normalised, even in conversations in the radio or in the media in general. You know, drug taking is not seen as a problem. You know, they speak about hash, but hash is more or less dead. It's now called a weed.
Can I come in, Joe, there?
Yes, Bernie, yes. And
Joe, I feel too, another thing. People are afraid to come forward because they have to feel safe coming forward. You have to know that if you come forward and you know about drugs, or you know about people on drugs, or even if you're only worried about drugs, you have to know that the people you're talking to, you can trust them. People need to know that there's absolutely going to be a consequence if you're found with drugs. And when you hear about people getting sent to jail and even killing people, I think you'd probably get a longer sentence these days if you didn't pay your tax, now, to be honest about it. And when you hear about people after committing the worst crimes that you could imagine and they're back out, so who do you ring up then, Joe? What's the point, like?
Philip,
There is the National Family Support Network. So for anyone who's been intimidated or who wants to know anything about drugs or looking for help or support in any way, you can go on. They have groups in every county in the country. So there is help out there if people need it, and that's the National Family Support Network.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take a break. Thanks. Oh, let me bring Claire in. Claire, I know you were a teacher, and you saw one of your brightest students get into trouble with drugs. What happened to him or her?
Well, I suppose, he was a perfectly bright and capable student and went on and with whatever culture got involved in drugs. But just to do with, I think he saw the lucrative aspect of, you know, how much money he was going to make from this. And that is a huge problem. And that's why I have I believe we should look at the whole debate about legal decriminalising first and then legalising, because I think that so much whatever chemicals are mixed with drugs to make it lucrative, that's dangerous for people, and what they're taking is seriously dangerous.
Well, to make it stronger, is that like the government said they've no plans to legalise
cannabis. I know there's no plans.
Decriminalise it further is another debate.
But
Claire, is it not fair to say that during Prohibition, I know people always cite that, there was an enormous amount of underground alcohol available.
What I'm just saying, it creates a crime culture. So banning a substance just puts it underground and creates a space.
Society should have nothing to say about drugs.
Well, what I'm saying is, of course we should. But if you look at other countries, the war on drugs isn't working.
Have you ever met a happy drug addict?
No, they're so sad.
I've met
and
a
they
few
need
of
so
them.
Much help. They need so much help. But so much funding is going into the crime. Whereas if we were helping those people, as is happening in Portugal, and they have really made huge inroads into the problems on drugs in Portugal.
Well, one study,
of the way
I know,
looking at
well, I'd love to see more studies on Portugal, but one study said that the overall consumption of drugs in Portugal has increased by just under
5%. And what about the number of deaths from it?
Is that the only way you can measure?
The number of deaths and the number of crime has all reduced.
Okay, Bernie, what do you think of what Claire is saying? That is, take the law out of it. Let people don't...
And that's not really what I'm saying, Joe.
Well, what are you saying? Sorry, then, Claire.
I'm saying that people who are on drugs, many of them need so much help.
Yeah.
And funding isn't there for that. And I think people who are selling and dealing in drugs are in a crime culture. They're making, I mean, you spoke about the limousines and the Gucci, whatever. That it's so appealing to them. If that wasn't there, if they weren't making that money out of it, they wouldn't bother with that. It wouldn't be worth their while to do that. So all the money that's going into policing them could be used to try and help addicts.
Well, Bernie, you were saying you need more Gardaí in this area. Claire is saying we need less police involvement.
I just believe, Joe, if you're driving around in a car that costs 100,000 euros and you're not working, how are you driving around in that car?
I won the lotto.
Money from drugs.
Joe, you have to prove everything. You know when you get your wage packet at the end of the week and all the little things tell you where every single penny went. How are they doing it?
Sorry,
now,
Joe,
if you know that these people are doing it on a regular basis, non-stop, how are the people that are vulnerable that when they close their door in the night, they're on their own in their house?
Cabs seem to be on the ball in that area. Philip, you wanted to make a quick point.
Yeah, just a quick observation there, the war on drugs. But in Ireland, we've never had a war on drugs. We've had a national drug strategy. And the guards sit around the table there, you know what I mean? And so do the Department of Health and, you know, education. And they're all there, you know, and there's always been a developmental attitude taken.
Well, the argument that the current regime is not working.
Well, I don't know what will work, and that's the that's the reason for having a strategy, and always being trying to, develop new strategies when emerging trends come out of the drug scene. Because we see, even with hash, it started off with, you know, fairly mild hash, and now it's gone to weed. And one of the arguments, I suppose, against the regulation is that if it's regulated, then, and like in Canada, where they have regulated, people are still going to go to underground to get the stronger drugs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a very complex issue, and it is something that the whole of society has to take on board.
Okay,
and that's why I say that we all have a role to play, whether we use drugs or not. It's affecting us all through burglaries, handbag snatches, shops being rifled and cars being interfered, all this kind of stuff. The acquisitive crimes, they affect us all. So we have to have a voice.
Okay.
And it's great to hear on your radio parents coming along and describing the problems that they have with their adult children smoking weed all day. But that's a huge problem for families, and they need to be able to express that somehow.
Okay, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Oh, at RT.ie. Rachel, good afternoon.
Hi. Hello, Joe. How are you?
What age was your son when he started taking drugs?
My son was 13 when he started taking cannabis with his friends. And he's now 30 and he's still taking it.
30.
And he's even starting to try and grow his own. And but I'm just listening to your callers.
And is this all under your nose, Rachel?
It starts with his father had left and he went off the rails, so he started smoking, all this kind of thing. He started bringing it into the house and I kept warning him he better not. I even got the guards involved, tried to get them to talk to him to no avail. He just kept on doing it and it just kept escalating until he started... You're talking about crime there to other people. Well, my son actually robbed me.
Yeah.
He robbed the house. He robbed my neighbours. He smashed up my car. He stole my children, my smaller children's electronic gear and sold it.
Ah, God.
He did whatever he had to do just to get money.
And do you ever have, it's a terrible one, but do you ever have, Rachel, as we discovered earlier with Mary Ann, did you ever have drug dealers coming looking for money off you?
I did last year. I was just going to a researcher there. Last summer, my daughter was working. She works in a hotel. And she rang me and said, "Mum, some fella's at the ring of the hotel asking if I work there."
Okay.
And I said to her, "Look, it's probably something or nothing." And then later on that evening, a car came into my driveway and a young lad got out and started threatening me, saying he wanted money. Mm-hmm. I also live next door to a guard. And he said to me, "I know you live next door to a guard." And he was waving his arm around from one house to another. And he says, "And I don't effing well care." Okay. I want money and I want to get it.
Where's your son now? He's now 30, 17 years later. Is he still on drugs?
My son is 30. He's now living in England because he's on the run, because he owes money.
He's on the run, yeah.
And he's living in England now, and he can't even, he has three children here in Ireland, and he can't even come home to see his children because he's afraid that someone, because some of the local boys in the town know these people, and he's afraid that they will come looking for him. So I'm left here to sort it all out. Okay. I haven't heard anything since, thank God, which would. It was only the one incident of someone coming to the house, but
Sorry about the line, but I do get the message. He's 17 years on drugs. He's now on the run in the UK and robbed, stole, borrowed, purloined everything in the house, regardless of the age of his siblings, and sold it to try and get money. Back tomorrow. Thank you all, by the way. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Hugh Orman, producer, and Ray Darcy is next.
1850-715-815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.